You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there, Buffalo Bills fans. Welcome back to Believe, a Buffalo Bills fan podcast here on BuffaloRumblings.com and everywhere else you go to find your podcasts, including Alexa. If you ask Alexa to play the Buffalo Rumblings podcast, you will get our podcast along with the entire family of Buffalo Rumblings podcasts. We are so glad you took the time to find us here on this Memorial Day. I hope that you are enjoying the nice weather and taking time to honor those brave men and women who have lost their lives in service to our country and the military. It's definitely, I think people forget why we have Memorial Day, and it's different than Veterans Day. So to our servicemen out there who have passed on in service, and to their families, we salute you for your service. And we are so glad that you chose to spend a little bit of your Memorial Day here with us on Believe. I am John Boccacino, welcoming on my colleague and co-host, Jamie D'Amico, for what is sure to be a more depressing version of the pod. Last week, we went through the best players of the drought era from 2000 to 2017. Jamie, today, the other shoe falls, the worst players during the Bills era. I'm not sure about you, but my Prozac supply has been dwindling because this list is really making me feel down in the dumps.
Dude, I've got to tell you that last week I had so much fun putting together my list and doing the research on the best players. This one I'm going through, and I got to tell you, I've got really mixed emotions. I'm not feeling great about this podcast. Like, I'm wondering if the people listening to this are going to see the humor in it, which is what we intended, or whether it's just going to depress the hell out of people. Maybe we can hang our hats on the fact that at least we're not in this era anymore. We all made it through together. We helped each other through it, and we're on to a brighter future, it seems.
Yeah, that's definitely part of the, I think, appeal for us doing this was for therapy. You know, we've all been through the battle wounds together of these awful Buffalo Bills teams of the 17-year playoff drought. So, Jamie, last week we laid out the ground rules. Same rules apply. These are Buffalo Bills players who predominantly played from 2000 to 2017. Nobody from the Super Bowl era or those playoff-bound Bills will be considered for this rendition of the draft. For the most part, we have tried to instill a minimum standard of suckiness and that a player had to have appeared, we'll say at least 8 games started will be a benchmark, at least half a season, because a lot of the players, if you suck, you're probably not going to play for more than a year or maybe two for a team like Buffalo. So we have some glorious examples of terrible players to run through. And we encourage you to get involved in the group therapy by commenting on our worst of the drought teams on social media and also on BuffaloRumblings.com. Just like we did last week, Jamie, there was a pre-show coin flip to choose who gets to go first. And I won the honor of getting to draft the quarterback who is going to be my drought era worst quarterback. And before fans say some names, listen, if we didn't have the minimum of 8 games, there were so many guys that could have gone in this radar. You know, Brian Brohm.
That was the first one I thought of.
Brian frickin' Brohm, man. Hello. What a terrible. He was so hyped out of Louisville and played for the Green Bay Packers. I say played. He was on their practice squad and didn't really see much time behind their legendary starters, Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. And then Brohm gets released and comes to Buffalo for 2 years. I don't know how many career starts he made because I remember one game, I believe, against the Atlanta Falcons where he was just god-awful. And so
that was the only one. He had one career start.
So you could have gone Brian Brohm without the minimum. You could have gone Jeff Toole, who threw a 108-yard pick six against the undefeated Kansas City Chiefs at home. I recall that game because I was sitting in our end zone seats and we're watching, and Toole had Sammy Watkins open, and he had Bob Woods, Robert Woods open on these crossing slants, and he tried to force it into a tight window. I forget the Chiefs corner who took it and ran back, and seeing him run 108 yards away from us was probably one of the most demoralizing sights of my Buffalo Bills fandom. So that's my Jeff Toole memory. I have two, just to share another one.
You have two Jeff Toole memories?
Dude, I was in Cleveland the night that EJ Manuel hurt, who, by the way, EJ Manuel is going to be my quarterback I'm going to take. I'll get the cat out of the bag right now since we've kind of gone down a little tangent. But no, my buddy Patrick and I made the road trip to Cleveland on a Thursday night to watch the Bills and the Browns play. And because where else would you rather be in October than Cleveland on a Thursday night? And we had a great time at the tailgate, had a great time with the Bills fans and the Browns fans. And the game was pretty entertaining. EJ was, you know, decent during that game. But then there was a play, I believe, late in the third quarter. He was trying to go for a first down as the Bills were in the red zone. And he was trying to get an extra yard, maybe a yard and a half. And he just completely got blown up on the sidelines, thus ushering in the era of Jeff Toole. So I was there to see Jeff Toole's two most infamous moments with the Buffalo Bills. How many fans can claim that out there amongst Bills Mafia, by the way?
There's not a lot of them. Hang your head high, my friend.
Yeah, so that is my Jeff Toole stories. I'm going to take EJ Manuel as my quarterback. Again, I could have also gone with Nathan Peterman, and Jamie, you could still pick him as well. He had eight career games and four starts, and we all know about that five interceptions in 14 pass attempts game against the Chargers. But for the sake of this parameters of our discussion, EJ Manuel is my pick. The fact that he was the 16th overall pick in the 2013 NFL draft, when he probably could have been there when the Bills picked in the second round, or maybe even later in the second round, it was a reach. He never lived up to any of his potential. His arm was nothing special. He was 6-11 during his tenure as a starter. 3,500 yards combined in those 17 starts, 19 touchdowns and 15 picks. And Jamie, the reason I chose EJ Manuel above all those atrocious stats I just mentioned was, when you ask me my memories of EJ Manuel, yes, he had a great fourth quarter comeback win over the Carolina Panthers when he hit Sammy Watkins for a last second touchdown on my birthday to beat the Panthers. That was an awesome highlight. Beyond that, EJ Manuel was good at one thing: drawing dudes off sides. And for me, if you're going to spend a 16th overall pick on a quarterback, you got to get more than that.
It was pretty funny to watch them bring him in after he became a bench warmer, just to watch him draw people off sides on fourth and short. Amazing. Great talent, you know, but not a reason to draft a guy high. Now, my selection here, I was a little indecisive about this one, because Nathan Peterman was by far the worst quarterback to start eight games for the Buffalo Bills in this era. But I had to go with J.P. Lossman. He was a one-trick pony. He could throw a deep ball to Lee Evans. Outside of that, he completed 59% of his passes. His QB rating was 75.6. That's awful. The guy had no feel for the pocket. He couldn't anticipate guys getting open. He was inaccurate. And to make matters worse, they traded back into the first round and got totally hosed by the Dallas Cowboys on picks to get this guy who did not belong starting in the NFL. That is why that's my pick, because they gave up so many assets to get this guy.
Remember that time he had three long, deep touchdown passes to Lee Evans, I believe, against the Houston Texans or Miami Dolphins? I forget which game that was.
I can't remember which.
And he looked like a bona fide starting quarterback. He looked like a star. And I think the Bills were victimized that year, because you look at that draft class, you had Eli Manning and Ben Roethlisberger and Phillip Rivers that were all taken in that draft class. And of course, Buffalo wants to get a quarterback, so they jump back into the first round, giving up the first rounder in the following year's draft, which could have been Aaron Rodgers. I know 24 other teams passed on Rodgers, and the Bills never had a chance without a first-round pick that year. But that makes that pick even harder to swallow, Jamie. So good job on your ineptitude pick at quarterback. Who are you feeling for running back?
For running back, this one kind of gets me in the heart a little bit because I always liked this guy. He was a hard runner. He did everything the team asked of him on special teams, blocking as a wide receiver. But when you look at his stats, that with the Buffalo Bills, he averaged only 3.6 yards per carry and never rushed for more than 341 yards in a season. I'm going to go with Sammy Morris here. From the early 2000s. Like I said, this one's, it's a hard one for me because I loved the guy, but he played during a really bad era and he seems like the best of the worst.
Yeah, you know, Jamie, honest to God, I was really hoping that he was going to fall to me as my all-time worst running back only because he had that one great rookie season. I think he had 5 rushing touchdowns. He had 4 in the first 6 weeks. And then after that, you know, he did nothing special, was a special team standout, but definitely nobody to write home about. So your running back selection was very, very good on your part. I guess on my end then, since you took Mr. Sammy Morris, I'm going to go with a one-year wonder who really epitomizes everything that was wrong with the Buffalo Bills during their draft class and during their draft, their playoff drought. I'm going Carlos Williams, and you might say, whoa, that's a crazy pick. He had 7 touchdowns his rookie year. Yeah, he did, but the dude also ate his way out of football, and he claimed that his wife was pregnant, so he was eating along with her so she would feel less insecure, and it was basically the baby weight that he was putting on. He ate himself out of football, took away such a promising start to his career, and it was so frustrating to see. He hasn't come back. He's trying to make a comeback, I believe, in the Canadian Football League. If you really want a good story, The Athletic put out a piece on Carlos Williams where he shares his thoughts on Doug Whaley, the former Buffalo Bills general manager. And he,
oh my God.
Did you read that one, Jamie?
Oh yeah, I did. It like the guy is so delusional.
That's why I think he's going to make my team as the worst running back, if you will, because of his attitude being a head case. He told Doug Whaley to eat in a part of his body that is probably not going to earn him many fans out there as well. So Carlos Williams to me is my cruddy running back I'll put on there. There were some other candidates we considered. Sammy Morris is a great pick just because he also went on to a pretty good career with the Patriots after his Buffalo failings. But I'll take Carlos Williams as my running back of lack of distinction, shall we say. Now, when it comes to our wide receivers, there are some pretty bad choices to go through. But for me, I'm going to go along the same lines of somebody who was expected to contribute and really didn't do diddly poo when he came to Buffalo. I'm going TJ Graham, the former third round pick.
I knew it. You took mine.
We're thinking alike so far on these first couple of picks out here. Not surprising given our mentalities towards the Bills. TJ Graham, 69th overall pick, 15 games his rookie season, only caught 322 receiving yards on 31 receptions with 1 TD. That was basically his career highlight. His next in 2013, he had 23 receptions for 361 yards and 2 TDs. And, you know, while the quarterbacks were terrible that were throwing him the ball and he didn't have the most accurate of quarterback play, he was a poor route runner and didn't have great hands and definitely never justified that third round pick overall.
Absolutely not. And for mine, this is one of the things where it's not the player that annoyed me as much as the hype, because one Bills drive is really good at trying to sell you a line of shit. And these players, you think to yourself, oh, they're not any good. But then you start hearing the stories from the mini camps and then the training camp, and they start hyping this up and the PR machine gets going. And next thing you know, you're expecting great things out of Donald Jones, who produces nothing. So that's going to be mine, Donald Jones, because in the 3 years where he was starting intermittently or in his final year with the Bills, 2012, he never had more than 443 yards receiving. And this is the thing that really got me is his career catch percentage, which is the number of targets that he actually hauled in, was about 53%. Now, granted, there's some bad quarterback play. There's some bad offensive line play that goes into this, but you got to catch more than half the passes thrown your way, my man.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought up Donald Jones, because my top four of ineptitude for receivers were TJ Graham, Donald Jones, Jordan Matthews for his one ill-fated season in Buffalo, and Kelvin Benjamin, who I just cannot stand for how lazy and you know, how bad of a route runner he was. But Donald Jones, you're right.
Awful.
My God. I mean, dude, that's the thing where we're reading through, and for every Stevie Johnson, who's a seventh rounder who overachieves, you have all these guys who underachieved. James Hardy only had 10 career catches. He didn't get to make our list. He didn't play long enough, but so many bad wide receivers out there. And Donald Jones was just a great selection at being a horrible receiver.
Thank you. And here's the other thing that is going to become, it's going to become something that is repeated throughout this process, which is after his final season with the Buffalo Bills, he was out of football. Now, you don't want to let players go and then they become stars with other teams. But what you don't want is to have such an untalented roster that your starters can't even get a backup job in the league. So pay attention to the players that we talk about, because a lot of that happened.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Jamie, because my tight end selection. Oh, actually, no, you get to go first on the tight ends, right? Because I took TJ Graham and you went with your wide receiver of Donald Jones. So you get the first of the tight ends. Who are you taking?
Right. So my tight end, I'm going to go with a guy who started 9 games for the Bills during these years, and he put up a whopping 7 receptions for 43 yards in that season for the Bills. His name is David Martin. Do you have any memory of that guy?
I do, only because it was mostly from doing my research on this draft. I have no recollection of any of his 7 catches. The one touchdown catch in his 1 year as a starter for the Bills, totally bland player who clearly did not leave an impression on many people.
Amen. But I'm excited to hear about your tight end selection now.
Yeah, mine came down to 2 picks, and I'm not going to say the other one in case. And we actually had a fan who we want to thank for giving on the BuffaloRumblings.com, who went through and did like a third team leftovers from our best of Bill's drought players. And I'm hoping this guy gets involved with other fans in their worst of picking up who we did not draft. So I'm not going to spill the beans on who I could have taken as my tight end. The one I'm going to take is somebody who is expected to have big contributions. It's not Charles Clay, but he was signed to a 5-year contract after a pretty pedestrian career with, I believe, the Washington Redskins. Robert Royal is going to be my tight end that I'm going to pick for the Buffalo Bills all worst of the drought year. He stuck around long enough with the Bills to play 3 years. He only had 830 total receiving yards and 7 touchdowns. For the productivity that the Bills were paying him, he should have given them double those contributions at least. And the offenses were terrible. Robert Royal was also a bit of a penalty machine himself. So I'm taking Robert Royal as my all inept tight end for the Bills.
That's a good selection. And, you know, it goes back to the hype machine when the Bills were overpaying players to come into Buffalo. You had expectations of these guys. Robert Royal signed a pretty hefty deal. And next thing you know, dude's not making catches, dude's not blocking. And that makes it worse in some cases than a guy like a David Martin, who for the life of me, I can't even picture him on the field.
Yeah, the one dubious season with the Buffalo Bills and did not do much there. A common theme for a lot of our terrible Bills draft here for the worst of the Buffalo Bills players during the drought era. Speaking of worsts, Jamie, my left tackle, I might put up there as good as Jason Peters was. This left tackle was just as bad. And he also went through a pretty confusing name change as well once he left Buffalo. Demetrius Bell is going to be my left tackle.
Ah.
And dude, people probably remember him because he was, I think, 6'5", 320 pounds, didn't play football until he got to college. People, scouts fell in love with his raw physique and his talent. and it just never materialized. He had 30 starts for the Bills as a seventh round pick. Now, they didn't spend that much draft capital to sign the guy, but he was just awful. He would get beat in his one-on-one matchups constantly. His technique was poor. And yet somehow, after three terrible seasons with the Bills, Philly gives him this ridiculous five-year deal, saying he was one of the best free agent offensive linemen out there. So Demetrius Bell is my left tackle.
And, you know, back before Fitz, who went to Harvard and wears his wedding band, which was mentioned in every telecast, we had Demetrius Bell. It was always mentioned that he was the son of Karl Malone, the Hall of Fame basketball player. It was amazing how often that was spoken of, yet didn't seem to translate into great performance. Now, my left tackle, this one stands out in my mind because this is a guy who was a journeyman through most of his career, ended up in Buffalo, started half a season there, and then very famously, Buddy Nix kind of got pranked when somebody used their cell phone to connect him to the general manager of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And they're having a conversation back and forth where Buddy Nix didn't sound like the brightest guy. But anyway, this player at this point was on the Tampa roster. And the Tampa GM said, "Oh man, I can't find anybody to take this dude off of my hands." That was Jonathan Scott. Do you remember him starting at left tackle?
I remember the story of Buddy Nix looking like a grandpa who got hacked and had no idea how to use technology, but Jonathan Scott does not ring a bell. So fill me in on this bum.
This dude was an absolute, I'm going to call him a matador. He was really good at looking like he was about to block somebody, and then he would almost get out of the way. He was slow out of his stance. He got pushed backwards all the time. If a speed rusher got around him anytime they wanted to, he got pushed back into the quarterback's lap regularly. And then he went on to play for Tampa and Pittsburgh, but really he was a backup because I believe he played more than one position, so teams would keep him around his depth. He was never a guy that anybody wanted to start, but hey, this was Buffalo and this was a dark era, so sure enough, he was starting.
We'll take your trash and try to find treasure. And that clearly was not the case with Jonathan Scott. How about your left guard? Who's going to be starting next to this fine young man?
Oh, that's going to be another big money free agent. Benny Anderson. He came over from the Ravens as a free agent and signed a big contract. And when he got to Buffalo, he was overweight. And in his 14 starts, he committed 9 penalties, was let go after one season, and after signing like a 3 or 4 year contract that cut him straight away after that season. And then he only played in 2 more NFL games before his career was over. You know why? He got his money and then ate himself out of the league.
Sensing a theme here with a lot of these players, underperforming their ridiculous contracts. I will continue that theme with my left guard. I mentioned the guy who is most associated with this pick last week in my best of, only because there were slim pickings to go through with this free agent class that the Bills had on the offensive line. But I'm going to go Derek Dockery as my left guard of dubious distinction on this team, mostly because he had a 7-year, $49 million contract with $18 million guaranteed for somebody who had proven serviceable with the Redskins, but definitely not of the Pro Bowl caliber. He only played 2 years in Buffalo. He started every game, but he was basically no better than a tackling dummy out there as far as providing protection for J.P. Lossman and Trent Edwards. So I'll go Derek Dockery based on his money situation and the fact that he was so nondescript with his play that it was like, what are you doing, Bills? Terrible selection.
Yeah, these players end up really maligned when they sign the big money deal, and they get run out of town pretty fast if they don't perform up to the standard of their contract or even the reputation. In his case, he had a good reputation before Buffalo, but it was one of those things where I think these free agents ended up in Buffalo because nobody else wanted them, and Buffalo was just, they were abysmal during that time period. Now for center, you know, center wasn't that bad of a position through the drought. Would you say that it wasn't as bad as, say, the right-hand side of the line?
Yeah, it was tough to come down with a center, Jamie, because we've really had a lot of quality center play. We mentioned a lot of the guys last week, including Eric Wood, Trey Teague, and Jeff Hangartner. But center has had a lot more talent, a lot more hits than misses.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with one. He wasn't as terrible as some of the other players, but I'm going to go with Duke Preston, who played with the team for 4 years, and in 1 year he was a full-time starter, another year halftime. But along with that recurring theme, after being with the team for 4 years, he was out of football. Nobody wanted him.
You know, Jamie, that's a great selection. He actually was going to be the guy I was going to go with as well. But instead, I have a guy who, if you wanted to go back at the 07-08 season, the Bills probably got the worst center play in the league, necessitating the drafting of Eric Wood with a first-round selection, when you combined your boy Duke Preston and my boy Melvin Fowler, who...
Yep.
What an awful, awful center he was. Again, tons of penalties. He committed a bunch of false starts he had during his time in Buffalo. And at the age of 29, after a 3-year stint with the Bills, he was out of the league. So another former Bill whose last days came playing for these awful Buffalo Bills. So that's my center on my all drought worst of team.
That was a good one.
Well, thanks, bud. Thanks. And so was yours, of course, with Duke Preston. The right guard spot was a little bit challenging for me. Again, because even though there's been so many bad right guards and right tackles, how do you choose the worst of the worst? I'm going to go back to a guy who was a fifth round pick from the 2001 draft class. Marcus Sullivan is going to be my right guard. He started somehow all 16 games in 2002 as a right guard for a revolving door turnstile type offensive line that gave up a ton of sacks. Definitely nothing to write home about with Marcus Sullivan as your right guard. Okay. And really somebody who, again, was only in the league for 3 years. And guess what? His last days playing in the league were with the Buffalo Bills. So that's my guy.
I remember him very clearly because that was the era the Bills went through, like, 6 or 8 years where you're constantly seeing jailbreaks by the other team's defensive line getting into the backfield seemingly unblocked all the damn time. It's like, what are they even doing out there? Like, if they fall down, they would at least slow these dudes down enough. Like, what were they doing? And Marcus Sullivan was going to be my pick because he was a penalty machine. In that year that he started, I looked it up. He committed 10 penalties. That's terrible. So I'm going to go with a guy who started just a little bit after him. In fact, the following season, his name is Mike Pusillo. And Buffalo drafted him in the 7th round. He started 12 games his rookie season, but was never a full-time starter after that. And he played for the Bills in 03 and 04. And then after 04, was out of football once again. So from starter to out of football within 18 months, not a good move, Buffalo.
Another terrible, terrible selection. And wrapping up the offense will be the right tackle. Jamie, who you got as your right tackle? Who's going to be your blindside protector on this all-awful team?
This is the no-brainer of all of these, right? Like, you really have to select Mike Williams.
Yes, you do.
From being the 4th overall selection in the 02 draft, I mean, expectations of this guy were high, but this was Tom Donahoe as the Buffalo's GM who liked to get cute in the draft. And if you wanted an offensive lineman, there was one sitting there that everybody knew was the best lineman in the country, and that was Bryant McKinney. Everybody knew that this guy was going to be a 10-year foundation at left tackle, but no, Buffalo goes with the right tackle that has slow feet. So what makes that so awful is, okay, it was not a great draft that year. Dwight Freeney was selected after that, but still, you could have had this guy who had a 12-year career and made a Pro Bowl in Bryant McKinney. Instead, you selected Mike Williams, who after 4 years was sent packing. He played a year in Washington and then was done.
He tried coming back to the league with the Redskins as a guard after, again, stop me if you heard this before, eating his way out of the league. So, and yeah, those what if scenarios, man. Bryant McKinney, even though McKinney underperformed a little bit based on what, you know, they thought he should have been a superstar in Minnesota, but he had a great stellar career and would have been awesome to have him protecting the blind side in Buffalo instead of your boy, Mike Williams. So that's basically the no-brainer of the offense there for who you would take as your most inept player during the drought. So for me, I'm going to mention a guy who I think I teased a little bit last week on the pod, and I'm just obsessed with this guy because he's so nondescript and he didn't do anything well, but he somehow managed to play 11 games in 2010. It's Mansfield Rado is going to be love my it. Right tackle.
I love that name.
He committed 7 penalties during those 11 games. And again, just was a terrible, you know, didn't do anything well run blocking or pass blocking. So he will be the quote unquote anchor who allows EJ Manuel to get sacked 17 times a game.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
This ended up actually being a little bit more fun because there was a little more of, oh yeah, I remember that guy, than, ah, Jesus, why did we stick with this team? But, you know, it does raise the question, what was the front office doing during this time period?
I mean, so many misses when it came to their draft class and so many free agent busts. And I think that's a perfect segue because I got to go with the second of the right tackles. I feel like I get the slam dunk home run of the defense for my all worst players of the drought. Defensive end Aaron Maben is going to be coming to my team as the first defensive selection. To me, this is a no-brainer. You know, you get drafted number 11 overall in 2009 as a premier edge rusher in the draft, and you proceed to get no sacks in your two seasons, coming after holding out for a bigger contract once you were drafted out of Penn State. Maben started one game in two seasons with the Bills, couldn't even make it through his third training camp with the team, and he was just, you talk about such a bust. It was Aaron Maben. And then the fact that he goes to the Jets and has a 3-sack game, and you're just like, where the hell was this in Buffalo? This guy, Aaron Maben, persona non grata in Buffalo. What a joke.
You know, the thing that was most frustrating about that selection was everybody knew that he had bust written all over him, and there was a player on the board that everybody knew should have been taken there. It should have been Brian Arakpo, who went on to have an all-pro season after that. And, you know, if they had taken Brian Arakpo, that may have been the best Bills draft class in history, because coming after that came Eric Wood, Andy Levitre, and Jairus Byrd.
That was a pretty solid draft class out there. Yeah, imagine if it was Arakpo instead of Aaron Maben. What a difference that would have made for the Bills and their draft fortunes.
Oh, man. So for my defensive end, I'm going to go with a guy who was a third-round pick, and he was with the Bills from 2010 to 2013 and then again in 2015. Now, this is a guy that I actually had a hard time putting in here because I really wanted to like the guy. He was a 3-4 defensive end, and, you know, 3-4 DEs don't really put up the stats that 4-3 defensive ends do. But at the same time, this guy just did nothing in his 4-5 seasons with the Bills. In that time period, he had 10 quarterback hits total and 4 sacks. That's just no production at all. A total of 60 tackles in 5 years. Nothing. I mean, that's pathetic. His name is Alex Carrington.
Yep. That's a great one right there.
So now we move on to defensive tackle. And, you know, there were some no-name guys that got in here. Now, there were some dudes that were really bad that showed up in that, but they didn't qualify because they didn't play enough games. Well, they didn't start enough games, I should say. So amongst the players that are not included here on my list, obviously, are going to be Terrell Troop and John McCargo. And we could go on and on about why those were horrible selections and why we hate the fact that they ended up in Buffalo at all. But for my defensive tackle, I'm going to go with Tim Anderson. And he started for a couple of years. And in those 2 years that he started, well, I mean, he played for the Bills for 4 full seasons, but in those 2 years that he started, he was very nondescript, and he had 2 total quarterback hits and 7 tackles for loss. I remember watching him and thinking to myself, I have never seen a defensive lineman spend so much time laying on the ground as this guy.
Boy, that's Jamie, Tim Anderson. I mean, my goodness, you talk about, yeah, somebody who just, again, a tackling dummy could have done a better job of getting the job done than what Anderson did for what the Bills were committing. And that's another example of a horrible, horrible player, which is why our worst Bills teams are going to be so stacked, because there's been so many bad players during the drought era. My defensive tackle is going to be somebody who has a claim to fame of being part of the 2 worst defenses in Bills history in 2010 and 2011. He is Dewan Edwards, who used to play for the Baltimore Ravens. In 56 career games, he had 2 sacks. Then the Bills were like, you know what? We're going to throw $18 million at you to come over and improve the Buffalo defense. It didn't work well. He started 24 games, 3.5 sacks before being cut in 2012. That's my defensive tackle, Dewan Edwards. Come on down.
Man, that's a good one. And the thing is, I didn't think he was a bad player when the Bills signed him. I'm like, well, you know, he's coming from Baltimore, and man, they've got a stacked defense and they draft well. And, you know, I was a big fan of what Ozzie Newsome was doing back then and what Eric DaCosta is doing as their general manager now. And yeah, just there was no production, and they were terrible on D.
Yeah, those teams were like, and the Bills could put up points, but they would lose games 35-34, yeah. You know?
Yeah, it was awful. But that takes us to the linebackers. Is that where you lead off?
Yep, I get to go first with the linebackers, and I'm going to choose a guy who came to Buffalo when the Bills were looking for a veteran to try to push this team over the playoff hump. They were coming off a god-awful 2001 season. There were some young players they were trying to build around, including, of course, Mike Williams. And the Bills reached out and signed a former second-round pick named Eddie Robinson of the Houston Oilers. And when Eddie played in 2002, starting right side linebacker, 15 of 16 games. He was clearly at the end of his road. He won very forgettable season as a starter. He had 8 pass breakups, 1 interception, no sacks, clearly a player at the end of the line out there. So for me, Eddie Robinson had a good career before coming to Buffalo, but nothing left in the tank. And this speaks both to, I think, the high quality of linebackers that Buffalo has produced and the fact that it's just, I don't know, it's hard for me to find a linebacker who was worse than Eddie Robinson. Could you top that, Jamie?
You know, Eddie Robinson was one of those players that, again, we were fed that line of shit where they're talking about, oh, it's great having him. He's like a coach on the field. Well, yeah, you know, there's a coach on the sideline too. He doesn't make any tackles. Same with Eddie Robinson. yeah, you know, I think that a player that was even worse. Now, you're ready for this one. This was a guy who you had on your best of list. One of the worst linebackers they've ever had on the Buffalo Bills was Chris Kelce. That was when the Bills switched from a 4-3 to a 3-4 front and then moved Chris Kelce, who is a hand-in-the-dirt defensive end. They switched him to outside linebacker. That was not his position, and that's what they did to him in the last couple of years of his career. And, you know, he was an effort guy, and he still made plays, but you're taking a guy and putting him somewhere where he doesn't belong. That's just not going to win you games.
Yeah, that's a terrible way to switch out somebody who, again, yeah, a hand in the dirt, edge rusher, you know, get after the quarterback, make some good plays in the backfield, and you move Kelce, who had been really, really solid as a defensive end, out to the left outside linebacker, a horrible, horrible spot, horrible switch for him. And again, another reason why the Bills missed the playoffs for 17 years. You take a position of strength and you weaken it. What are you doing?
Yeah, man, when they were doing that, they then brought in the 3-4 defensive linemen, and they had actually 2 former defensive linemen starting at linebackers. They had one of the slowest defenses in the NFL that year, and it was just like, this isn't going to work, guys. You can't just move a player to a position where he doesn't belong and expect success.
Yeah. It does not work that way, but those are our Buffalo Bills for us. So that is your starting linebacker. It's a great selection, a sneaky selection. Now, Jamie, comes to a really tough part for me, at least. I'm not sure how much fun or difficulty you had with a cornerback spot. Who is going to be your cornerback on this team?
This one, I could really only come up with one. And it was the guy that former head coach Wade Phillips once referred to as not the punt returner, but the punt catcher, because he was so bad at returning kicks. That would be Chris Watson, who was on the team between 2000 and 2002. He was a starter in 2002 at the beginning of the season. And in 8 games, he had 7 penalties between pass interference and holding calls, illegal contact downfield. He was just targeted endlessly by the other teams to the point that they eventually had to just put him on the bench and deactivate him because he was so bad out there.
Gosh, that's a name from the past. I hadn't thought about him, and I can't tell you the last time I thought about him. So you did a really good job of digging somebody up from the Bills graveyard to fit here on Bill Eve, and I like your tie-in. Jamie, my guy I'm going to go with is my cornerback, because, again, there's so many good corners the Bills have had. It was hard to find somebody who would really fit this bill, but, pun intended. This player is actually an original Bill. He played his entire career with the Bills. He never got to play in any of the Super Bowl-era teams, but he was drafted right after the Super Bowl era ended for Buffalo. He was on the 99 playoff team starting 14 games, but he also was on 2000 and 2001 and parts of 2002. It's Ken Irvin, the cornerback, is going to be my selection. And Ken Irvin is just, again, another one of those nondescript, you know, players for the Bills. It would have been Vontae Davis if we didn't have a starts minimum, because he couldn't make it through one full home game before walking away. But, you know, Ken Irvin started at the right cornerback spot for 2 years. He had 11 pass breakups and 2 interceptions during those 2 seasons, and just did not have the height, did not have the speed, and he was not a very good cover corner. And again, clearly at the end of his career as well. So for me, I'm going with Ken Irvin as my cornerback.
That's a good selection. He was at the end of his career. He was certainly, you know, a competent player in his early days, but age gets to these guys, and you know, you lose a step as a DB, and the next thing you know, receivers are going right around you. So that leads us to safety. I'm interested to see what you're going to come up with here.
So my safety selection, and the reason I'm going with him, he had more talent. I'm going to say worst, as this is going to be including both on and off field moments. And
I know exactly where you're going.
I play for the Buffalo Bills. I am worth millions. Coe Simpson, come on down. You are going to be the starting safety on my worst Bills players of the drought era. I might be cheating a little bit on this one, Jamie, because his stats weren't terrible. As a rookie, he was forced into starting after an injury. He had two interceptions his rookie season. He had two interceptions in 2008 after missing most of 07 with a broken ankle. But for me, Coe Simpson is on this team because him and his friend were speeding on New Year's Day after partying. The friend who's driving is getting arrested by the officer. And Coe Simpson, rather than sitting there and being like, all right, my buddy's taking one, I'm going to stay out of the limelight, decides to go after the police officer. And again, you know, he doesn't physically attack him, but he's all confrontational, wondering why his buddy's getting arrested. And he drops the phrase, I'm Coe Simpson with the Buffalo Bills. I am worth millions.
Don't you know who I am? That line always works, doesn't it?
I mean, especially when law enforcement is involved, Jamie, it always gets you off the hook.
So I'm going to go with a guy who was picked up by the Bills in 2000. I can't remember if he was drafted or if this guy was an undrafted free agent, but he played for the Bills in 2000 and 2001. He started full time in his second year, but he had zero interceptions and only 54 tackles from the safety position. His name is Rayon Hill. And then after his second season, he was out of football. So from starter to jobless.
I've never heard that one before, Jamie, that a Bills player ended their career in Buffalo after accomplishing absolutely nothing out there.
this pattern of guys going from starter to not even good enough to be a backup on another team kind of tells you all you need to know about that period of them missing the playoffs.
Oh, yes, absolutely. It was pure incompetence out there. And, you know, we're almost at the end, Jamie, of our worst players of the Bills drought era. And we're going to go with a kicker and a punter, and you get to go first on the kicker. Now, who do you have?
Okay. I'm going with this guy for an interesting sentimental reason. I'm picking Shane Graham, who was with the Bills in 2001, only made 75% of his field goals over the course of six games. Now, he ended up bouncing around the NFL for 15 years and really didn't have a bad career. However, I had a former roommate named Maya, and Maya went to Virginia Tech. And when she went to Virginia Tech, she dated Shane Graham, who also went to Virginia Tech. And I think Maya's great, and Shane Graham is a ginger, just like me. So he's my sentimental favorite for this position.
Nice. I like that. It's hard, Jamie, because the Bills have, you know, kicker is a tough position for us to come up with. But for me, I don't have a personal connection to this, but my guy was a guy who was signed to replace Steve Christie after the 2000 season. So heading into 2001, the Bills signed an undrafted free agent named Jake Arians to be their kicker. And it did not go well. He appeared in 10 games. He was money from 30 yards and in, going 6 of 6. But beyond 30, he went 6 of 15. And there's a reason that was his only season in the NFL. You count those six chippies that he made 57% of his field goals. Jake Arians, not good.
Not good at all. But now, the thing is, when you move on to punter...
Oh boy, this was, I don't even like, I'm going to pick somebody just because they had the lesser of the stats, because you've got the all pro Bills punter, Brian Moorman, and we can't go Corey Bohorquez because he doesn't count under our standards.
Right.
So
Brian Moorman he punted for what, like 13 of those 17 years without playoffs.
Yeah. He was a mainstay for sure. So I guess the guy I'm going to go with is Sean Powell, who in two seasons averaged nearly 45 yards a punt for the Bills. But I recall him having a bit more of a touchback problem where his punts weren't pinned inside the opponent's 20-yard line. So I'll go Sean Powell as my punter. Jamie, who are you taking?
That pretty much only leaves one other player, which is Colton Schmidt, who wasn't even that bad.
That goes to show you the punting position has been a position of strength for the Bills during this drought era that we've gone through. Now, we've wrapped up all of the positions. We want to do real quick a head coach. Jamie, who is going to lead your inept squad onto the field for the worst of?
Well, you know, this guy ended up having a really good squad for a year or two, but that was mostly because Tom Donahoe supplied the team with so much talent. The guy was just utterly dislikable, and he hasn't been head coach since then because of that, even though he's a great defensive mind. I'm going with Greg Williams because he's an asshole.
I love it. Yeah. The bounty gate with New Orleans. He just looks like a douche. I mean, what a terrible, terrible coach. He went 17-31 during the 01, 02, and 03 season. So Jamie's squad will be led by Greg Williams. And for me, it's really hard to think of who I would want to lead this squad, because there's not, I mean, you know, there's some bad coaches that the Bills have had, but if you talk about ineptitude and you talk about somebody who was clueless on the field, I'm taking Dick Geron. I feel like, I don't know how the Bears won 13 games that one year with him, where Mike Brown and all that great defense was returning interceptions for touchdowns. They won in spite of Dick Geron. In Buffalo, they did not win with Dick Geron at all. They went 24-33 during the 06, 07, 08, and 09 seasons. And Dick Geron was so vanilla that he's perfect to coach this team.
You know, that's a very interesting selection, because his winning percentage as a coach wasn't that bad, but he always just had this look of a dead man walking on the sidelines and was totally inept when it came to dealing with the media. If he had any of Rex Ryan's pizzazz, he probably could have stuck around, because he repeatedly went 7-9, and there's other head coaches whose records were far worse than that.
Oh, for sure. But you could have taken Chan Gailey.
Sure.
16-32. But I think for me, it's the overall sentiment of a team going nowhere, a team that might give you some glimmers of hope before falling back into the recesses of the abyss. And so for me, that's why Dick Geron is my head coach.
I mean, we're talking about a guy who punted from the other team's 32-yard line on 4th-and-4. Like, what in the world is that guy doing?
Awful, awful guy. Awful. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but awful coach. Awful person to have. And now, Jamie, now that we've wrapped up this podcast here, I really hope that this has been therapeutic for you. It's certainly been therapeutic for me to get this out. And you know, our Bills Mafia fans, you guys are listening to free therapy here as we get you through these difficult days. And again, remember, even though these players sucked and the Bills missed the playoffs 17 years in a row, we are no longer that team. That is a thing of the past, and we shall all revel in that.
Absolutely. There's a real silver lining here, because if you look at the players that started that we named off here, probably wouldn't even be good enough to be backups at some of the positions that the Bills have. And I'm in particular thinking about the offensive line, where the Bills' current offensive line isn't great. It's average at best, I think. And, you know, that's certainly something that we can debate. I know you're much higher on them than I am. But at the same time, they've got a lot of guys that are fringy starters that could start anywhere in the league. And their backups are right there with them. So I think that what we're looking at is a team right now that is very obviously on the rise. The national media is starting to recognize that. And it's really going through this really lets me look at what we've got now, and the current bird in the hand is certainly something to be excited about, because we don't have any of these chumps filling out the roster anymore.
No, we do not. Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean, and co have done a great job overhauling this roster. And like you mentioned, hope springs eternal. The Bills have a lot of optimism heading into the 2020 season. And now that we've closed the door on our drought era draft, we will get ready to focus on more of the Bills' future moving forward in 2020, what this team can accomplish. But Jamie, I want to take one last moment and thank you for this great podcast idea. It's been a lot of fun, and hopefully people will get involved on Twitter at the Jamie D'Amico and at John Boccacino, sharing your thoughts on this week's episode of the worst of the Bills draft from the drought era.
Oh man, it wasn't my idea. It was your idea too. And really, I want to hear what everybody else has thought about the worst players that we may have missed along the way.
Get involved in the conversation, guys. BuffaloRumblings.com. You can find us on Twitter. I gave you our handles at the Jamie D'Amico and at John Boccacino. Signing off on the Believe podcast, I am John. He is Jamie. We'll talk to you guys next week on Believe, a Buffalo Bills fan podcast.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure, it's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.